And then they saw me in a bra, and that was it.
What's going on, Pearl Jam nerd? What? Were you just humming?
Dude, I'm telling you, I am obsessed.
With what?
With Bayside.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I thought you were going to pause for a second there. Go ahead. Welcome to Single Podcast Theory.
Now the moment's gone.
I'll do it. Fuck it. No, I don't know.
Oh, Brad.
You want me to do it?
You walked right up to the diving board and then, nope, turned right back around.
It's too deep.
Yeah.
It's too far.
All right, well.
I started to.
What's going on, Pearl Jam nerds? You're listening to Single Podcast Theory. I'm Brad Lyons.
And I'm Brad Blazek.
Welcome, everybody.
That was good.
Oh, God. Yeah, man, episode 51.
Yeah.
Brendan O'Brien.
O'Brien.
Getting a little nerdy on this one. We'll see how that goes over with all the listeners, but
I'd love it.
Yeah, man. I think it's fun. What's been going on with you, man?
Man, I am just obsessed with Bayside. I can't stop listening. Well, you ever get like that?
Not with Bayside, but yeah. I've only heard that one word that I heard when you walked in, and I thought you were listening to like 80s, like, I don't know, like Poison type.
Yeah. Oh God, they don't sound like that, but I know what you're saying when you just hear a split second clip.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, dude, I mean, I've been listening to them for like a year now. Just here and there, and like I saw them a couple times, so I was like trying to like get ready and listen to them. But man, the last like month or few weeks, I just can't stop listening to this album, Vacancy.
That's cool. I'm in a weird Zeppelin phase right now.
Yeah,
I mean, and everyone knows I'm a huge Zeppelin fan, but that's one of those bands that kind of like the Beatles. Like, I don't listen to the Beatles that often. I don't listen to Zeppelin that often. But yeah. But I've been in deep the last 3 days for some reason.
Yeah, yeah. I get like that, but man, I just listen to it over and over, and then I'm like, well, I should listen to something else, so just put on a different album by them.
Right. Well, it'll end. Your obsession will end at some point.
Yeah.
And then you'll...
That's sad. Isn't that sad?
Yeah, it's a little bit sad, but then, you know, that means you can come back to it later, and it'll be like brand new again. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Man, I'm dropping truth over here, man. Sage wisdom.
You're like a life coach.
Mm. People tell me that all the time.
You're good at it.
I'm kidding. I know you're being sarcastic, but let's let's maybe just move on. What do you think to the emails?
Yeah.
You think
all right.
So? Yeah.
Sure.
All right. Let's do some Pearl Jam story time.
Good evening. This is Storytellers. We are here to tell stories.
We just have friends up here that are listening to stories.
Have I got a little story for you?
This is the true story. True story.
It's Brad B's week this week. What you got?
David wrote in. Let's see. You know what I did?
What'd you do, Brad? Pulled up the wrong email.
No, I pulled it up, but I don't. Do you have it in front of you?
Nope.
Oh. Here we go. Hold on.
I've got my first one pulled up.
David Gavin writes in. Hey, guys. He says, I'm fortunate to be friends with Eddie's guitar tech's sister. So I'm super fortunate to get passes now and again. When the Irish solo shows got announced, I thought I was in luck. This might be my chance to meet him. But when the time came, I was told no passes, tickets, or anything. It being the home show for Simon, Eddie's technician, all his family took the passes. Mm. Luckily, have you run into that before?
Yeah.
Yeah. luckily, I had purchased my own ticket. And then again, three times after that, I swapped and paid more to get as close as possible. Then on the walk down to the show, the husband of Simon's sister said, "Here, take my VIP pass. I'm not bothered, and you're obsessed." Oh, man. Whew. Just like David, he writes, because I would be the same way. I was freaking out for the whole show, wondering if I'd meet him and even be capable of talking to him. Yeah, that's a good anxiety fucking...
Yeah, no shit. shit sandwich right there, dude.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He probably doesn't even remember the show, you know?
Right.
So as the family were all front row, of course, they said to meet them at the pillar by the side of the stage immediately after the show. I did just that, but they weren't there. They had been pulled straight from the seats to backstage. Again, dude, that would happen to me.
Yeah.
You know, like, just meet us over here. I go there. There's nobody there. Now I'm fucked. I had 1% of battery on my phone, and when I rang my friend Jen, it died as she answered. Fuck, 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 I thought. I just thought, okay, pretend to be cool, because inside I was freaking out. I stayed on the phone pretending to talk to her, walked back in towards the stage and the security guard to the backstage. I waved my VIP pass and the security guy just opened the curtains for me. Fucking awesome, I'm in. Now where the fuck are they? I heard Jen's voice calling me, got brought into a tiny room and chatted about the show with Liz, their tour manager. Having beers, I thought he'd never come in here to us, and I was right. Liz handed us passes to the after party upstairs, and off we went. The upstairs was like a big warehouse-style bar with about 100 fans and family members of Glenn Hansard. I again thought, there's no way he'd come up here. Fortunately, I was wrong. God himself just walks in a bit later and starts working the room.
That's awesome.
I was in shock, but luckily a bit drunk at this stage. We were so far away that we would have been the last people he'd get to, so we grabbed Simon's dad and got him to intercept Eddie. Finally, I was talking to him. Quote, "I just wanted to thank you for 26 years of euphoria." I told him what his music did to me, and I said something so ridiculous and embarrassing like, "This is me reading David's words, but okay. In my voice.
Okay.
"Your music is like medication. It picks me up when I'm down. It makes me high when I'm not high." That's like how I would say it.
That would be unfortunate.
He looks me in the eyes and said, "That really means a lot. Thanks." Hugs me and kisses my neck. What the fuck? That was weird, but bloody awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, he kissed him, dude.
Hell yeah.
Eddie Vedder kissed him.
Why not? That's awesome.
Hashtag swoon?
Yeah, no shit.
I asked for a picture and Big Pete said, no photos or autograph. Eddie says, no, it's cool. Oh, man. Eddie says, cool.
Breaking the rules
Yeah.
Dude.
So we had the flash off in this dark bar. My other obsessed friend was trying to take the photo, but she was paralyzed with shock. She couldn't believe what she was doing, and she couldn't take the picture. Her face was fucking priceless, but at the same time, I wanted to slap that face and say, "Take the fucking pic, woman!"
Oh, God.
I thought we missed our chance. But Eddie says, "Come over to the bar where there's light. It's too dark to get a good picture here." I couldn't believe this was happening. What a legend. We got the pictures. Eddie smiled, but me and my buddy looked in shock. Eddie signed the bandana I bought at my first show in 93. He spoke about that show, and then he was off to make someone else's dreams come true. I partied so much that night that I nearly missed the next show. I did just make it, but I was so ill.
Yeah, I bet.
Sorry for dragging that out. Maybe you can tell I just love telling that story. Now I'm determined to thank Mike and the others in person and not say something so cringy. If you've read this far, thanks for reading. Hope you get to meet him. So humble and genuine. Cheers, Dave.
Nice.
Thanks, Dave. Yeah, I love that story.
That was a good story, man.
I wanted to read that one because we did our Eddie episode last week.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, this is a really good, that's a really cool Eddie-centric story.
So. Yeah. I wonder if, I would have loved to have met Glenn Hansard, too, though. I love him.
Oh, yeah.
That dude gives me chills sometimes.
Really? Yeah. I've never really dug into his stuff. I probably should, huh?
He's got some cool shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks again for the email, dude. All right, up next we've got Dan Waters. I believe this is in regard to Eddie as well. Yeah, it is. All right, he says, Brad's, just a short disclaimer before I get into this. My wife and 6-week-old are at my in-laws for the night, so I may have popped an edible and had a couple glasses of vino. So sorry in advance. I feel like Eddie at the singles premiere while I write this. Oh, man. Those chill nights at home when it's quiet. You love the family. You miss them the next day, but for that one night, it's kind of nice, you know?
Yeah.
Let's see here. Anyways, I love the deep dive into the life of Eddie Vedder and hearing a few stories that I never heard before. You guys touched on his high school years, so I feel compelled to tell you about the experience I had in his old stomping grounds. My best friend married a girl from San Diego, and they decided to have the wedding on the beach in Encinitas, so naturally I geeked out. Encinitas is home to a few things I truly love. Some amazing art, shout out to Andy Davis. It's home to the Scotty Cameron Gallery. He makes the best putters in golf. And of course, it's where Eddie dwelled as a teen. I asked the bride's family if they knew him or if there were any spots around San Diego where Indian Style or any of the other or any of his earlier bands may have played, but they were clueless to the whole situation. The morning before the wedding, I got a text from the bride asking me to meet her for coffee and that she had a surprise for me. She took me to her alma mater, which just happened to be Eddie Vedder's high school back in the day. Granted, I didn't see too much aside from the Clayton E. Liggett Theater. He was Eddie's mentor and the inspiration behind the song Long Road, or The Long Road. It was pretty cool knowing he walked those halls and some of his creative genius may have developed there. Despite it being a pretty bougie place, it was an experience to remember. The next morning, I woke up early to try and catch the first West Coast waves, but the swells decided not to show up, so we went to grab breakfast at a local spot instead. The man sitting next to us was a true surf bum. He was in his mid-50s with sun-bleached hair and teeth. I was like, everyone's got teeth, right? Sun-bleached hair and teeth, and the darkest tan I've ever seen. I was confessing.
Sun-bleached hair and teeth.
Right, that's what I was saying. The way I read it the first time was like, he's got sun-bleached hair and teeth. You know what I mean? Like separate?
Yeah, right.
Anyway, I was confessing to my buddies how I wanted to channel my inner Eddie while riding the very waves he used to ride as a teen, and I was quickly interrupted with, you want to see his old house? I tried to act cool because I was with a bunch of buddies that think I'm a little off my rocker for loving a band so much. But inside, I wanted to scream, fuck yes I do. Long story short, he gave us the address and I made sure we took the long road home. See what I did there? To the Airbnb we were staying in so I could see it. I'm not really sure what the whole point of this whole email is. So if it never makes the podcast, I 1000% get it. It was just super cool to see the things that may have played a role in influencing the man behind the music we all love. Anyways, congrats on number 50, boys. Thank you for all the hard work and effort you put into the podcast. Dan Waters. Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, that's where he wrote the Mama Son trilogy, right? The lyrics?
Right, that area, yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, he said he went out, he listened to it and then went out surfing and came back and wrote the words.
Yep.
So Dan might have been washed in the same waters.
Take me to the river.
Like, isn't that weird?
It's like a baptism.
I mean, it could be the same water.
Brad.
Like, they say, like, the same air we breathe is the same air, like, the dinosaurs breathed. Like, how isn't that crazy?
Who sounds like the stoner this week?
Me? Yeah. Me?
Dude, do you we're ever breathing sound like the same air as the dinosaurs, bro. No, just think about it, man.
Like, there's no such thing as time.
Is there?
It's all just happening right now.
My mind's blown. Let's move on to the next email.
Do you know there? Have I talked about this before? I probably have. There's a guy here in Tennessee, and his grandfather was friends with Abraham Lincoln.
Okay.
Think about that. There's a man living that his grandfather was around when Abraham Lincoln, and not just around, like they knew each other. Grandfather. Not great-great-great-grandfather, his grandfather.
The guy that knew Abraham Lincoln is still alive?
No, his grandfather knew Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, I gotcha. Gotcha. It's crazy, man. Stuff wasn't all that long ago when you really think about it.
Yeah, but it was, dude. Grandfather?
Yeah. Like, no, I'm not saying it's not cool.
My grandfather was born, like, in the, I don't know, 20s?
30s? Sounds about right. Yeah.
I mean, Abe Lincoln was killed 50 years before that.
Sure.
That just blows my fucking mind. I can't believe you're just like, yeah, whatever, dude.
I'm not being like that. I'm just listening. Don't get mad at me.
I'm not mad, dude. I'm easily amused, as we learned earlier in the show.
As we learned episode one. Right.
Oh, don't bring up episode one.
Oh God, I'll never listen to the first. I'll never listen to the first 50. You know.
Oh, it's. Ugh.
All right, who we got here?
All right, is it me? Am I up?
Yeah, man. Gina.
Regina writes in. Hey guys, happy 50. Wishes for 50 more. That lions won't listen to. Great review of Avocado last week. In addition to the review, I had the biggest smile when I listened to Amanda B. share her joy. This was 2 weeks ago, I guess, now, right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying. Okay, I listened to Amanda B. share her joy about the Taylor Swift concert. Way to build memories, Brad B. It will be a day that your daughter will remember the rest of her life. And how cool she will sound when she starts off with, my dad and I... blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of memories, in the good old days when I was 40, we didn't have podcasts and other such mystical things. We had to read books, buy magazines, or watch MTV for our news. Of course, I'm joking in response to your comment about Sarah C. being 40 and a listener. You remember we were talking about, like, we probably figured, like, most listeners are kind of younger.
Right. No, I remember that. The conversation okay. we had?
Yeah. Okay. I'm actually 56 and listen to many podcasts. In fact, since I'm up to date on Single Podcast Theory, I started Metal Up Your Podcast. So far, I'm enjoying it. Partial to you guys, but Metal Up Your Podcasts are great also. Thanks for the tip. Back to Avocado. My thoughts on the album were pretty solid until I revisited it with you guys. I really only liked Parachutes and Army Reserve. I forgot how great Severed Hand and Life Wasted were. Thanks, fellas. I have also been astounded by the lyrics that Eddie and the boys pen. Sounds like that is a poignant point for you guys also. I might not always understand what it means, but the delivery emotes something that touches my core, and that is all I need. Until next time, keep on keeping on. Your friend, Regina.
Hell yeah. Thanks, Regina. It's funny. I mean... all joking aside, I remember us having a conversation about what she's talking about at the end of the email there, one of our first episodes, just talking about how their music is so, and his voice is so kind of transcendent, that, and they have such like an international audience that, you know, there's probably lots of people that really don't know what he's saying. They just are kind of, you know what I mean? His voice makes them feel something, even if they don't know the words, you know? Yeah, you can
just feel that emotion.
Yeah.
Coming through, kind of like Bayside.
Exactly.
That's
exactly what I was thinking. All right, thanks again, Regina. All right, next up, bagel time. It's time for a bagel bite. This one is called Nothing and Ed. He says, oh, Brad and Slide
yes,
Whistle Guy.
Yes, yeah.
No, no one was calling
who,
for him.
Who? Me? I love that name,
I just
though.
Hate that it's Slide. Out of my control. It's so out of my control. You're in a different state.
You know it's coming.
Oh, man. Okay.
All right, go on.
He says, a quick one on Nothing. Just throwing it out there that some of the head-scratching about the record, I think, stems from the fact that they went into that recording process with some pretty grandiose ideas of a concept album. It is always a weird listen to me, and for the longest time, I could not put my finger on why. I really enjoyed several of the tracks the moment that I put the record on. Life Wasted, Worldwide Suicide, Severed Hand, which has some of that essential twist and turn in songwriting that began to emerge on Binaural and Riot Act. And of course, Marker, which, you know, made my top 10 studio tracks, and you guys ran over it like a squirrel that had been stuck in the road for a few weeks. No biggie, I'm not sad about that at all. In all seriousness, there are a bunch of very good to excellent songs on that record, but there's something about the flow, and to me, that carried over a lot into Backspacer, and ultimately, it is why I like Lightning Bolt so much. And that reason is Mr. O'Brien. While I may never forgive Brendan for not doing analog masters of Pearl Jam records, his greatest element as a producer is the ability to not just get the end sound of the track, but to help sequence and properly edit what does and does not belong. Nothing is a lot of misfit songs that struggle to work together. They are not bad songs, but as a unit, they are like a Rubik's Cube that you are never going to solve. Whereas I think Binaural and Riot Act survive not having Brendan at the steering wheel, Nothing does not. They needed a master producer to steer in a big way. I loved the episode on Ed. Clint was a great guest. I thoroughly enjoy and embrace his brand of humor with crazy pop culture references, out of left field turns, and general good-natured ribbing. That was a fun listen. Hopefully you both get a chance to dive into A Five Against One, an interesting read, even though it sort of goes to great lengths to demystify Ed, the brooding rock star, which was really more just the caricature that was created around and about him than who he really was. Every time the backstory of the Mama Son tape comes up, I always think back to the first time I heard the recording of the Zurich, Switzerland 6/18/92 show. It was sometime in late May of 93. I was holed up in my friend's backyard doing things that 20-year-olds do in colleges on summer break. I listened to that and my mind was just blown and a little bit freaked out. Meanwhile, Pearl Jam was in the studio in Northern California knocking out verses. Until the next slide whistle, Bagel. Thanks, Bagel. Mm. And yeah. I want to say just real quick that I couldn't agree anymore 100% about how much Brendan contributes as far as kind of the bigger picture, not just like song by song, but the bigger picture of a record. And they trust him. You know what I'm saying? They've worked with him so much. I think he can get in there the way other producers can't. Not because they're not good, but just because they haven't had the amount of time as he has with them, you know?
Yeah.
So, good observation. Thanks, Bagel. What you got next?
Kate Cotton writes in. Hey, guys. Or is it, how do I say that? Hey, guys.
I think that's probably closer.
Okay. Holland. I'm going to try and keep my thoughts brief, but I can't make any guarantees. As I mentioned previously...
added another syllable and something else in there, too. I don't know what it was.
I don't know what happened there. As I mentioned previously, I only really started seriously listening to Avocado, or should I say Nothing. I love all the emails. People are really picking up on the Nothing.
From your brain.
Renaming. No, that wasn't for me.
I know, I'm just kidding.
She only started listening this year. It's the last Pearl Jam album that I picked up, which is why it always ranked as number 10 on my list. I hesitated to pick it up ever after having listened to Stephen Hyden's take on it on his podcast, Celebration Rock. I don't recall him ever speaking poorly of it, but he frequently brought up the fact that it came close to being a concept album. an album that focused heavily on the war and politics. I don't hate politics in music. I think it's great. But the concept of an album leaning heavily on the topic of war intimidated me a bit. I like a nice smattering of all topics. Love, heartbreak, nature, family, pain, and a little bit of politics to ruffle everyone's feathers every now and then. That's how I am, too.
Yeah, I dig that.
Like, I don't need the whole album to be about politics.
Sure.
But a little bit here and there is okay. Eventually, I moved past this fear of being overwhelmed, because music is how you interpret it anyway, and started listening to Avocado, and I think it's a truly fantastic album. This band does no wrong. My only somewhat criticisms. I think Worldwide Suicide would be a better opener than Life Wasted. Also, unpopular opinion, but I'm not as big a fan of Parachutes as everyone else. I don't skip it or anything. I just don't love it. Sorry, Brad B. and the rest of the Pearl Jam world. Dude, I get it. Like, that song is kind of... It's not like a real Pearl Jammy rock song. No,
it's very different for them. Know? Yeah.
But for me, it's obviously, it's just the personal attachment that I put to it, you know?
Sure, totally.
But if I didn't have that part of it, I probably wouldn't like that song as much as I do either.
I agree with that. I don't think you would at all. You know what I'm saying? I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean, like, you've got these really great kind of these great memories attached to it, you know?
Yeah. You know me. You know me too well. And I think Unemployable is really a meh song. I could do without it. But every other song is gold, particularly the second half. I love the first half of the album, The Real Rockers. But when you guys said how you don't really crave a lot of songs from this album, I related that to how I feel about the first half. But songs like Gone, Big Wave, Comeback, and Inside Job, yes, they hit the spot. Which brings me to my next opinion, Inside Job. I can't believe this song would be a skipper for anyone. Maybe it's because my first major experience with this song was watching it on the big screen at the debut of Let's Play 2. Oh man, the feels. I think you can relate to that, Lions.
Yeah, man.
I know the intro feels unnecessarily long, but I disagree that it's too lengthy. The pre-intro reminds me of an old-fashioned movie reel sequence, and I picture it to represent a flashback of sorts. And the droning guitar that plays throughout the intro sounds weepy and painful in a way that represents looking back at the past through tearful eyes. And then Eddie starts singing Mike's words, powerfully reflecting the meaning of what it is to be human. And there are these moments of triumph that just build up and build and explode at the end through the yeah yeahs that make my heart jump into my throat every time. It's so powerful. Like, we've all overcome this imaginary obstacle that is life together. I think she likes this song, dude.
Yeah, man.
I think it does something for her.
I think so, yeah.
I've never personally struggled with addiction, but I know many people who have, and this song just gets it. And I myself struggle with some fluctuating anxiety, and the words, how I choose to feel is how I am, are so powerful to me. Feelings are rarely a choice, but we can control how we channel them, and that's such an important message. I love this song so much. It comes close to breaking into my top 10. Yeah, dude. I'm back on board with Inside Job.
Yeah, man. It's good shit.
She goes on to say, I was going to comment on the Eddie episode with Clint, but the length of this email has already surpassed what I had anticipated, as per usual. I'll save those thoughts for another time. I'll just say that I loved the episode so much. You guys are hilarious. Peace, Coco. And then she says, I've already decided I hate this nickname.
I love that. I love she put it there anyway.
Yeah. So, yeah. Thank you, Coco.
Thanks, Coco. We
love What's hearing up, from Coco? You. Yeah, dude. Yeah, the more I listen to nothing, the more I get into it a little bit more.
Yeah, again, I think Bagel articulated for himself, you know, why. I mean, I think the same thing as Bagel. He articulated it much better than I could. I couldn't really figure out what it was about the combination of songs, but I think the way he described all that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
You know? All right, cool. We got one more from Franz Braun. And I accidentally said Hans earlier when we were talking through before we started recording because of growing up with Hans and Franz on SNL. Anyway, it has nothing to do with you, Franz.
But, dude, is Franz Braun the most German name you've ever heard?
It's pretty German.
It's up there. Yeah.
It's pretty German. I mean, not going to lie.
Yeah. It, yeah.
He says, Brad's, what's up from Berlin? Last night was pretty epic. Pearl Jam opened the show with Wash. Unbelievable. Danny Clinch played harmonica during Red Mosquito. I would have fucking loved to have seen that.
Yeah.
He says, we got a sweet cover of Angie by the Rolling Stones. Hell yeah. They played Habit and Save You. Eddie was admiring the pit and appropriately played Porch, in which the entire stadium started throwing flat beverage trays into the air. That was my second concert of this tour. My friend Brandon and I were in Prague. Our next show will be in Barcelona before we head back to the States. On this tour, we've been able to hang out with our friends from Chile that we met during Pearl Jam pre-party in Mexico City in 2015, and we have stayed in contact with since. By the way, the cover band, Totem Rock Band, was pretty effing amazing. Check them out. We've been repeatedly invited by our Chilean friends to see Pearl Jam in South America. I'm sure we will take them up on it in the future. That's the amazing thing about Pearl Jam shows, is connecting with others. I met two people last night who got to experience Pearl Jam for the first time. The expression on their faces was priceless. They kept on saying, this is so cool and this is fucking amazing, in their German and Israeli accents. It reminded me of my first Pearl Jam show, November 7th, 1995, with the Ramones opening. That would have been badass. Yeah. 4 days later, I left on my first 6 month deployment on board the USS. God, I'm going to butcher this.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Peleliu. That's what I'm going to stick with that. As Navy aviation electrician for helicopters. That's crazy shit. Wow. Up at the, yeah. Last night was show number 21. Anyway, I thought I would write the show and share my experience with you and the SPT faithful listeners. I've been listening for the last 3 months and enjoy Pearl Jam story time, but today was the first time I felt compelled to write. All hail the lucky ones. Love, peace, and hair grease. Hoss. And then he sent some pictures, which are pretty badass.
Yeah. Yeah, and he sent a video of Angie, just a little clip of it, so that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's badass. And I was just thinking, like, man, working on helicopter, an electrician for helicopters, that's no joke, dude. Woo! You must be a smart dude.
Six months on one of those?
Oh, God.
Could you do it?
I don't know. Could you?
I doubt it.
I think I'd go insane.
Yeah.
Maybe not. I don't know. Anyway, well, thanks for the update on the shows, man. That was really cool to hear.
Yeah, we've gotten a few like that. And I like that we read this one in particular. But like I said, excuse me, we've gotten a few emails from people saying, like, besides how great it is for the show, it's so great to meet people in line, you know, meeting these fans and connecting with people. And, you know, I've never been out of the U.S. So when I go to shows and I meet people that have come here from overseas, I just love talking to those people. It seems like such a cool thing.
We gotta figure out a way to get you overseas.
Yeah.
We need to go somewhere.
Like,
everyone's got to go overseas.
Franz mentioned South America, and I, you know, those shows are always crazy, yeah. You know, so that would be pretty cool. I'd love to go to Mexico.
Yeah, man. Hell yeah.
I mean, that would probably be out of everywhere. That'd be like the easiest to get to, I guess.
But yeah, probably.
I love, never mind.
Oh, man, I had a dream the other night I forgot to tell you about, and I don't know why I just thought of it. I had a dream that we were at the Chicago shows, and...
Chicago.
Yeah, we went to Chicago, And I can't remember what they opened with, but then the first time Eddie talked in the show, he goes, in his Eddie voice, he said, "What's up, Pearl Jam nerds?" And everyone cheered. And we were like, "That's awesome. Get the fuck out of here." And then I woke up.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a good one, though.
I laughed my ass off when I woke up and that's realized funny. That yeah. That's what I had dreamt. But, yeah.
That's great.
Figured I'd share that with you. So if you want to email us, you can email us at singlepodcasttheory@gmail.com. We are on all the socials, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Just search for us. We're on YouTube as well. Post all of our shows there. If you'd like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com. That is patreon.com/singlepodcasttheory. It'll explain everything there. And yeah, the t-shirts are done, dude. I'm just waiting on them to show up in the mail. It finally fucking happened. So
yeah,
that's part of the deal too. And we've got other little incentives. And we'll continue to figure out, you know, the best way to do all that stuff and try and grow it as well. But thanks to all you who do support us. We got a couple new ones this week, right?
We did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mar. I don't know if it's Mar or Mare.
Yeah.
Mar Vigil.
Yep.
But I don't know if like it's short for Mary, so it'd be like Mare.
Maybe.
But Mar Vigil. And do you know who the other one is?
We've got, I'm going to butcher this name as well, but. Yeah,
thank you. That's why I asked you to say
that's
it.
Why you, yeah, I see what you did. I'm going to say Siobhan Conley. Thank you very, very much for your contribution.
I was
going to
say Siobhan. Siobhan?
It could be, yeah.
But I don't know. I guess I could have Googled it, huh?
There's a good chance we'll be getting an email that'll correct us kindly.
Yeah. We might be getting a cancellation email.
Fuck you guys.
Yeah.
No, but thanks to all you new supporters and the ones that have been with us from the beginning, whether that's through Patreon or that's just because you listen, we appreciate it all equally. And thank you guys so very much for listening.
Yeah, and I just want to say real quick, Aurelian, who had signed up earlier, he changed his. He upped his donation.
Dang. Thanks, dude.
Thank you. Thank you, Aurelian.
For sure. All right, well, that's it for the emails.
Go ahead.
No.
Is that it?
What were you going to say?
I just wanted to give a quick shout out to SPTOG Danny B.
Yeah, man.
His dog passed away earlier in the week. And yeah, he posted about it on Facebook. So
it's so brutal.
Felt bad. Yeah. So shout out to Danny B. And his dog's name? Sonny B. God. I thought that was pretty cool.
I just like this guy more and more.
I know.
I'm really sorry about that, dude.
Yeah.
That's rough shit. All right, you got any other fun stuff? Or we
No, I didn't.
Okay, cool. All right, well, that's it for the emails.
Hey, little thing, let me light your candle, calls the mama, I'm sure all the hand and I just around. The words and I'm a man, a great experience. I know you got another man, but I can love you better than him.
All right. Episode 51, Brendan O'Brien, and you just heard a little bit of what was probably, especially if you were, I don't know, younger at this time, the first Brendan O'Brien production that we probably heard over the airwaves, and that was the Black Crowes with their Otis Redding cover of Hard to Handle. You remember that one, right?
Love that song.
Yeah, and I think it kind of shocked me, actually, that you said you're a Crowes fan? Or you like them? Or don't hate them?
I like
or
what them. I like them. Yeah, I like them. I mean, I wouldn't say they're my favorite. I probably couldn't do a all Black Crowes podcast, but yeah, I like them.
Even though the reason why you don't like Dissident is because it's a Southern Rocky bluesy lick.
I don't like everything by them.
By Black Crowes?
Right.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I just want to get make sure we're on the same page here.
I always remember like listening to that song, and my dad heard it and was like, "Oh, I remember that song." And I'm like, "How do you know?" And he was like, "That's a cover." Who is it? Otis Redding. Otis Redding cover. And I was like, "Oh, that's I didn't realize that song was a cover." So,
yeah, I honestly, it took me like 2 or 3 years before I knew that. You know what I mean? Because I feel like it wasn't really publicized either that it was an Otis Redding song. But
no, anyway. I don't think so.
But yeah,
I didn't know the lyrics. That's what it was. I didn't know what he was saying. And my dad like busted out the words, and I'm like, "How the hell did you know?"
He's cool.
yeah.
Well, all right. Let's start off with just a little bit of background, basic info. Brendan O'Brien was born June 30th, 1960, in Atlanta, Georgia. Another Southern boy, just like me, I guess. I mean, I grew up in the South, but was born in Missouri. He plays a ton of different instruments, even though I guess he would consider himself a guitar player, but he definitely plays keys. It seems like he ends up playing keys on every record that he produces, it feels like sometimes. But I mentioned this before. I was going to do some like chronological order of at least bigger records that he's produced, and I finally said, fuck it. Literally
3 hour, the first 3 hour episode.
I made it through like 93, and then on my notes it literally says fuck it, and then there's just a list. So I mean, as we already mentioned, 1990 he did the Black Crowes, their first record, Shake Your Moneymaker, that had, we talked about Hard to Handle, but also had Twice as Hard, which was a pretty big hit. Jealous Again was a really big hit, and then She Talks to Angels was a gigantic hit,
monster.
You know? He did some engineering for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, specifically stuff like Give It Away, and he played keys on that. Let's see here. He did the 92 follow-up record, Southern Harmony, that the Black Crowes did. It just, like, so his first time in the studio as a producer was for Verses. So I'm assuming that'd be like, I mean, Verses came out in 93, but I can't remember the dates. If he
You mean for Pearl Jam?
Yeah, for Verses.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did they start recording that in 92 and it came out in 93, or it was all done in 93? I can't remember, but.
Yeah, I don't know. We should know that as the premiere Pearl Jam podcast.
Yeah. But, I mean, even before that came out, he had already produced Stone Temple Pilots' first record, Core, which obviously had some really huge hits. Some because they were huge hits, like Plush. Some because it was kind of controversial lyrics. But I always thought that was... Once I got over the feeling, I was a kid, and I was like, he's just trying to be like Eddie Vedder about Scott Weiland. Did you feel that way?
Not really. Maybe for like a minute.
Okay. Yeah.
Just because that one video, that video is like very Pearl Jammy.
Sure. It feels like everything was pretty Pearl Jammy at that point. I mean, they made an impression really quickly, you know?
Yeah.
But then I guess I'll just go down a list. I thought it was funny that he did a lot of work on Aerosmith's Get a Grip record, which I love that record, but I did not know he had anything to do with that. But we've got Soundgarden, Neil Young, Ben Folds 5, Brad, Rage Against the Machine, Sheryl Crow, Amy Mann, Train, Bruce Springsteen, Incubus, Offspring, Audio Slave. He did some mixing for Danny Elfman, who's a really quirky, awesome composer. And the easiest reference for his work would be The Simpsons theme.
What's his face, the director,
Tim Burton.
He does like every soundtrack for Tim Burton's movies.
Absolutely. Velvet Revolver, Mastodon, AC/DC, The Killers, Chris Cornell solo, Wolf Mother, your favorite band Korn, Limp Bizkit, your other favorite band. Anyway, but that is a shit ton of really important rock bands and records.
You forgot Jackal.
I did forget Jackal with the chainsaw guitar solo, dude.
Yeah, the lumberjack, baby.
Yeah, and the funny thing is I don't remember anything about the song. I couldn't sing you a single melody or lyric or riff. I just remember the scene in the music video with him with the chainsaw. That's all I remember.
The chainsaw solo. He plays a chainsaw. For people that don't know. That's like the solo, is him playing a chainsaw.
You know, what I want to know in these situations is that usually, all right, so first of all, I don't know anything about Jackal, but let's just say that they're a 4 or 5 piece band, right? Mm-hmm. So that meant that within just the band, they all thought this was a good idea. But then, you know, they're surrounded ostensibly by management and people that are invested in their career. And they all signed off on it, too.
Right.
But I guess maybe it worked, because if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't remember that band.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah. They're still out there playing. I mean, they're selling out stadiums. But yeah, they're still together, and they still play.
Playing shitty clubs?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so sad. I don't mean that in a judgmental way. I just mean, just the thought of that makes me really sad. Yeah. Just being honest. So like I said, he plays guitar. That was his main instrument, and he was in a bunch of kind of local southeastern/Atlanta local bands, and they had a management company, all this kind of stuff. That band was called The Pranks. But then he worked with a lot of other bands. It's funny, in the Wikipedia they call them super regional acts. So I guess, you know, bands that can sell out good places in the South, but if they go to Missouri, no one knows who the fuck they are. You know what I mean?
Didn't he have another band with a really cool name?
Let's see.
Let me look.
Samurai Catfish?
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, that's it. I just love any guy that had a band called Samurai Catfish. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a good name.
And at one point in the 90s, after all these bands blew up that he had produced the records for, he became the vice president of Epic Records for a while in the mid-90s.
I was surprised when I read that.
I was too, because I don't remember that. But I'm sure I wasn't really too worried about that when I was 15 or 16 years old.
Yeah, not that I'm into the like inner corporate workings of a record company, but just, I don't know. You would think it'd be more of like a business person than like an actual musician producer.
Right. Yeah, totally. But, you know, I will say that was kind of the end of the traditional kind of record label paradigm thing. Because once you got close to the year 2000, iTunes started coming online and shit got weird.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so that's just a little bit of background. The funny thing about Brendan is that he doesn't do many interviews. He just does his work and then goes home. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
he's not like a Pharrell type producer who's like an artist and a celebrity as well as, you know, really good at some specific craft. He seems to shy away from that stuff, but which is probably the reason why he has such good relationships with his bands.
I was gonna say, well, especially with Pearl Jam, like they need somebody like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, so yeah, as far as Pearl Jam's concerned, I guess we talked about it a little bit before, but he had mixed Jeremy in 92. And if I'm remembering correctly, that's where they kind of got together. And
yeah, he mixed the single.
Right.
That's what, like, because the album version is the other guy, Tim Palmer.
Yes, the mixer. Yeah.
But if you get this for the single that came out, he is the.
It was the Brendan radio mix.
Yeah, exactly.
So basically, that just sounds like. But, and I'm sure it still happens now, but, you know, a record comes out that it's a band's first record. Obviously, the company doesn't know whether it's going to be huge or not, and maybe they didn't spend as much on the mixing process or something like that. But sometimes if an album kind of breaks like that, they'll have another big-time producer in whatever genre that is come in and just do remixes of the singles to be presented for radio, and especially back then when music videos were so ubiquitous, you know what I mean? That doesn't really exist anymore other than on YouTube, which I think is kind of lame. I miss the MTV, man.
Yeah.
The old MTV, I guess. Let's see here. Well, first of all, I think maybe we should, and you're going to kind of have to help me out here. We talked about this before, but I don't know. I'm really afraid of, because obviously this is right in my wheelhouse, Brendan O'Brien, not just because of Pearl Jam, but he's just always been, you know, one of my favorite producers of all time. And I might say some things that I think is normal, and you're like, what the fuck did you just say? And right, what are you talking about? So...
Feel
free to jump in and stop me.
Yeah, I'm playing the part of the audience today, so I'll ask you questions. If you say something, I'm like, what does that mean?
Right. Well, I mean, I think one thing that I think is funny is a lot of people don't really know what a producer is. You know what I'm saying? Like, they know it's a title that gets put on a record, and most people kind of get the understanding that they work with this one person, but they don't really understand what that actually looks like in practice. So,
yeah, give me like a day-to-day kind of thing, and maybe what's the difference between like a producer and an engineer and a mixer?
Ooh, very good question. So the engineer is someone that, like, if I get hired just as an engineer, then I'm literally there to place mics, you know, on whatever's being recorded, and kind of am expected to know good ways to do that because it does make a huge difference, especially on something like drums. And you might be the one pushing the buttons on the computer as far as editing or making sure everything gets recorded correctly, but you're not really putting any kind of like musical input or vision into the project. You're just literally there to capture what happens. Does that make sense? So
yes, definitely. Because more of like a roadie,
kind of. Except for a really knowledgeable. I mean, not that roadies aren't knowledgeable, but like if you get hired as an engineer, you really do have to know your shit. You know,
right? A tech. I should say like a tech.
Yeah. Like a high end tech. Totally. Absolutely. And the funny thing is, like, you can be an engineer and not a producer, right? And you can be a producer and an engineer, but producers sometimes have no engineering knowledge, right? Like, they hire a guy or a girl that is really great in engineer, and they kind of trust them, and they probably speak in more terms like an artist would, like, oh, when we get to that chorus, I wanted to, you know, that one vocal to sound like it's underwater and blah, 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 blah. And the engineer has to translate that, you know?
Yeah. Well, that makes sense because from what I gather from, as someone that doesn't know too much about it, but it seems like in a lot of these situations, the producer becomes like the sixth member.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
Yeah. There's different degrees of that too. I mean, some producers, will jump in and, you know, have comments on arrangements and, you know, not rewriting the song, but like, oh, let's put this part in this spot instead, or let's cut this part in half, or any of those kind of arrangement kind of creativity type ideas or calls that need to be made. That's the kind of stuff the producer does. But,
well, speaking of that, just real quick, has Brendan ever got a writing credit on anything?
I doubt, because
I want to say he does, but I can't remember.
I don't know what it, I mean. That's a good question, actually. I've never even thought to look that up, just because I feel like there's also the kind of producer that's like, yeah, I'll work with you, but I have to have co-written this many songs on the album.
Ooh.
Right? So then they're getting publishing off the record too.
Right.
Brendan does not, and typically that happens more with like pop solo artists and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That might actually need help with the songwriting part.
Right.
That makes sense. But Brendan's always done, you know, for the most part, rock bands. And I think he seems to be, he definitely has his ideas, and especially with a band like Pearl Jam that he's worked with for so long, there's got to be an insane amount of trust built between him and the band to be able to make calls and they'll actually listen to him. But, you know, he seems to be a little bit more hands-off in that way.
Right.
Like, if they did give him writing credit, I would imagine that he was probably didn't ask for it or want it. They probably did it.
Right.
I don't know. Out of kind of respect, and here's something a little extra.
I thought he had a writing credit on Future Days, but I guess it's just that he plays on it.
Oh, I gotcha. Plays keys or something.
Right.
Okay, cool. Well, the funny thing, too, is that I was listening back through everything, or a lot of the stuff that I kind of grew up listening to, and it was so cool kind of going through this list because, for example, I believe he mixed the first Benfolds, or I guess it's not the first, it's the one, Whatever and Ever Amen from Benfolds 5. That was their first kind of
breakout.
Hit record or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And I used to wear that album out. And when I started going through this list, especially during that 90s time period, man, I want to say 85% of the music that I listened to was all produced by him, whether I knew it or not.
Wow, that's interesting.
Because, I mean, look at that list. I mean, Soundgarden, Rage, yeah. Benfolds 5.
STP.
STP. I was listening to all this shit.
Korn.
I remember buying the Springsteen record. With exception of Korn. I mean, I was never a big Killers fan, but holy shit, he did that stuff too. I mean, those records were huge.
Yeah.
It's just funny to see the overlap now in hindsight when I didn't even know it at the time. But there's something about his records that I always loved, the sounds of them, you know? All right, where were
you?
Were
you ever a fan of Incubus?
I mean, yes and no. Like, I can't remember what record. I had one of their records, and it was probably like the first one that had like fucking 6 number one hits on it or something.
I mean, that's like their third album, but I know what you're talking. That was like their
first big record was.
Break, yeah, yeah.
But it was one of those records that like didn't stick with me. Like, it was cool when I first
got it. Yeah, I can see that.
And then I found myself after a month or two just never going back to it again, even though I liked it when it happened.
Yeah.
But there was one record that they put out a single that was a lot darker. And I wish I could remember what it was. I feel like it was kind of political, but I thought that song was badass. I wish I could remember the name of it, but
it might have. That sounds like there's an album called Light Grenades that came out in 2005.
That sounds like the right time period.
And the first song was called Animali.
That was it. I think that was it. It was kind of a darker song, right?
Yeah. That's a good album.
I thought that was a cool song, but I never heard the record.
Yeah. I'm not like the hugest fan of them, but they're for like a 10-year period, like 98 to like 2008. I like all their albums from then. I haven't really dug into them here the last few years, but
right,
they've got some good stuff.
Hell yeah. Just because I'm paranoid real quick, I'm going to go check and make sure we're still recording.
Sure. All right.
Pick up right there.
Okay.
All right, cool. We're good. We'll get this door shut. All right, let me. So actually, I was going to ask you a question. Like, I read off that list of some of the stuff that he... I didn't even put everything he's worked on this list. Right. But,
yeah, there's so much.
The big ones, or the most important ones, to me anyway. Like, and you just asked me about Incubus. Were there other bands... Well, yeah, what other bands that I listed did you listen to at the time? Like, how much Brendan O'Brien were you listening to, at the, you know, back then, whether you knew it or not?
Oh, yeah, a lot of them. Like, I literally only know him from Pearl Jam. So, like, pretty much everything by Stone Temple Pilots he did. Mm-hmm. I mean, Evil Empire, yes, Korn. I think Follow Leader is a great album.
Yeah.
And Mastodon, Crack the Sky.
Shit, that, man.
God damn, dude. That's a great fucking album. And, like, he's known for, like, Pearl Jam and Soundgarden and Stone Temple Pilots. So to hear that he produced, you know, this prog metal band was pretty nuts to me, you know?
Yeah, and that's the thing about that list, too, that, I mean, they're all kind of within the broad genre of rock and roll. To some extent, right? All the lists of people, exception of like Danny Elfman or something, but
yeah.
But even within that genre, he's stylistically, it's all very varied too. Like, he's not a one trick pony as far as that goes.
Yeah, well, and he's got his name not just as a producer, but like he mixed or engineered a bunch of stuff too that I'm like
absolutely
that I'm into. I mean, he what did I write down here? Danzig. The second Danzig album?
Yeah.
The Slayer live album, Decade of Aggression, which I was... Like, when I first started listening to Slayer, that's what I listened to mostly, was that live album. Because it's, like, all of that was available to me at that time. And then doing research for this episode, I saw his name pop up as... I guess he mixed that... And I'm like, that's pretty cool, you know. His name pops up on a lot of different stuff that I wouldn't have ever known. So it's cool that he was a part of that.
It's just I could be getting this wrong. I think the number is right though, but he has produced 14 number one records. That's a shit ton.
Yeah,
you know, like. Holy fuck, man. He's doing something right. But you know Paul Moak, or you know, I don't know if you've met Paul, right?
I met him, yeah. I met him at the Metal Up Your Podcast anniversary party.
Yeah, so
laid back. You talk about laid back.
Paul?
Yeah.
Oh, holy yeah, shit. Dude. Super laid back.
He's just the chillest dude I've ever met.
Just hanging out with his dreadlocks.
Mm-hmm.
But his
not anymore.
Did he cut him off?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, he posted on Instagram, and it obviously it doesn't even look like him.
I bet it
doesn't. Holy shit!
Damn. So he mixes on the same kind of console that Brendan O'Brien mixes on, and he saved a voicemail because he checked his voicemail. There's a number he didn't recognize, so he didn't answer it. Then he checked the voicemail, and it was like. Hi, Paul. This is Brendan O'Brien. I'm a producer. Like, if I remember it correctly, he was kind of like on the assumption that he wouldn't know who he was. He wasn't like, "Hey, motherfucker, this is Brendan O'Brien," yeah. and expect him to know. But obviously, because of Paul's taste in music, I mean, he's heavily influenced by all the music that he's made. Anyway, I would have lost my shit if I had a voicemail on my phone from Brendan O'Brien asking if he can come work at my desk, you know what I mean, use my desk for a mix while he's in Nashville. I'd have been like, yes, and can I set up secret hidden cameras and audio so I can learn everything that you just did on that mix, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That'd be really cool. Because to me, I think I'd geek out just as much about meeting Brendan as I would any of the band guys. And that doesn't diminish my love for the guys in Pearl Jam. Right. I'm just saying that's how much I love Brendan O'Brien.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think it'd be cool to meet him because I wouldn't be, like, fangirling out over him.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because I'm not as into him as you are, but it would be cool to meet him just because he's been such a big part of all this stuff.
He's been in the but room for what all I'm saying those is, records.
What I'm saying is, for me personally, I wouldn't be like freaking out, so I could actually like kind of have a normal conversation with the guy.
Yep. Yeah, I think I would just be like, hi, you and your work that you did with everybody, but especially Pearl Jam, is one of the reasons why I make a living doing music right now.
What did Dave say when he met Eddie in that, that email we read earlier?
Oh, I don't remember.
Oh, man. What did he say? Your music means so much to me. What?
Oh, yeah.
Trying to look it up here.
Yeah, and you did the voice.
Yeah. Yeah. Your production picks me up when I'm down. It makes me high when I'm not high.
Bro, I'm high on life and your music.
I'm high on verses, bro.
I'm just rocking positive over here, man. Oh, and there was a third part of that question that you asked. Mm-hmm. Like, mixing is different because he is also, he's kind of famous for his production, but he's also famous for his mixing. So a lot of these bands on the list, too, he didn't produce the record, but he's the kind of one of the rock, staple rock guys. Like, if you need a good mix for a rock band, Brendan's going to fucking kill it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's a separate different thing, though. Like, there's no recording involved in mixing. Like, they send you everything they recorded, and you go through and make it sound badass. You know, you're EQing, after, compressing. Yeah, it's all right after the fact. But it's a very, very important step in the process as well. Because once you start learning about mixing or start doing it yourself, and you get to compare, like... Like, I've been lucky to have friends and, like, a mentor that will say, like, send me stuff. He'll be like, this is what it sounded like when I got it, and this is what it sounds like now. And you're like, oh, my God, that thing sounds like shit. That, like, the before does.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, yeah, I just need to be mixed. It's like, dude, did you go in there and replace every sound on the record to something that sounded good? Because it's like... It sounds like two different recordings, and that's how important a mixer is. Because if they've got to be able to take stuff and make shitty sounding songs sound really good, and sometimes it's, you know, you can't polish a turd, you know.
Right. Oh, I know.
So anyway, that's a really dumb kind of explanation of what a mixer does, but. Yeah, I don't think...
No, like I said, it's to me, it's super interesting, this stuff, because it's not like they just go into a garage somewhere and record the shit and then it comes out, you know? It's like there's a lot of technical stuff going on in the background.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, and Brendan, you know, he has, at least two engineers / assistant engineers with him. He works with, sounds like two or three of the same dudes. I mean, Nick Didia did all that stuff with him. All those 90s Pearl Jam records. You can't forget what Nick brought to the table. You know what I mean? Just because he wasn't producing it.
Yeah, I see that name pop up all the time in the liner notes.
Yeah. And I think even Adam Casper had been an engineer for Brendan on a previous Pearl Jam record or two. And then he ended up producing... one of the records, but
well, he's another dude, isn't he, that a lot of alt bands,
yeah,
he's recorded with.
Yeah, he's got he and Nick both have really good names for themselves, you know.
Yeah.
Well, what else about Brendan? What, like, do you have questions about any of this stuff as someone that doesn't listen, you know, with the same ear, I guess? No, I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean
I've been debating if I should ask you or not, like, what kind of money can somebody make being a record producer? Or is that kind of gross, like, we shouldn't talk about
that? No, that's not I mean, I'm not gonna say what I make, but just in general, I mean,
yeah, just ballpark.
Well, here's the deal. So back in the 90s, I mean, think about those record budgets, man. Like $1 million to make a record.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he probably made a few hundred thousand at least off each, you know?
Yeah.
But then you had a lot more like middle of the road type. Those were for the really big records. But then you had stuff that was, you know, I would think a small budget for a record back then would have been $100,000. And now it's like, oh, you're giving me $15,000 to, you know, or whatever. It's like, it's just not the same. It didn't scale, you know, over time the same way. So, but now he is such a name that if he is getting involved in the project, there's going to be money.
Right.
It's just everyone else that kind of was coming up in the 10, 20 years after the industry started changing so much. You know, there wasn't as many producers getting to experience that, like, oh my God, I just got paid $100,000 to make a record. And it only took me 2 weeks, and that's awesome, you know? But it varies. Because I can tell you this, too, like, in the world I live in, which is, I don't deal with labels, I haven't gotten to that space yet, if I ever will. But part of that's because so many people are just doing it independently now, for obvious reasons. But I don't know, in the 90s it seemed like the people that were working at record labels really gave a shit about music, and yes, they were business people and whatever, but then that shift happened when, you know, bigger corporations were buying out these labels and trying to run it like an ad agency or something. You know what I mean? They're just kind of like numbers on a page.
It became way more like a corporate thing than art.
Yeah, totally. So, I mean, I know there's big name producers, though, that hear about a band, or they went to see another band that they produced play live, and this other band was opening for them, and they loved them, and they don't have a dime to their name, but the producer that normally charges $10,000 a song is just like, hey, I just really love your shit, and I'd like to work on it. You know?
Yeah.
Those guys do stuff like that sometimes. But all my work is like that. You know what I mean? There's no access for me for, like, a $50,000 budget or something. So
yeah.
It's just different times. I'm just glad that I can make money at all doing it.
Wikipedia says that he worked with Pantera. Is that, do you know anything about that?
I don't. And I just wonder, I saw that in his all music credits, but
yeah. I wonder if it was just like Slayer, like he just did a live album and that was it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I just don't remember him working on the studio records.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
It doesn't mean he didn't, but I don't remember it. And I feel like I would have. Because I used to listen the shit out of Pantera.
Yeah.
But, I don't know the answer to that one. It was kind of this, like, one mysterious line on his all music credits list.
Right.
Because it just said Pantera. Yeah, it didn't, if I remember correctly, it didn't say, like, what he did or what record or whatever. So it's kind of strange. Yeah. But
it's got to be, a best of or a live album that he just, you know, was a part of for some reason.
Yeah, sure. Well, and then sometimes too, like, another facet that can kind of fall under the producer moniker is, and I believe he did this a couple times, is a director or producer for a film will hire a producer to pick songs for a soundtrack. So it's not that he recorded all this shit. It's that, but he still gets a producer / executive producer credit because that band's song was on a compilation that he was the producer for.
Okay. Yeah.
So there's weird little loopholes like that as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes music business is so oddly complicated and stupid sometimes.
The credits.
Yeah. It's really weird. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, not to be too nerdy, but it's one thing that's really stuck out to me over the years is Brendan like, once you start paying attention to the work that he's done, you learn that his mixes, number one, are great, and especially when he's recorded the band that he's mixing, because he's been along for every step of the process at that point, and he knows what the energy in the room was, you know, the day that they recorded Go, you know, and he's gonna, that's gonna be part of how he mixes it, if that makes any sense. But his drum sounds are, to me, the most recognizable, and I don't literally mean this as some sort of conspiracy theory type thing, but if you go through and listen to a lot of those, especially the 90s records, and I'm talking like post Verses through, like, you know, maybe 98 or so, so maybe like a 5-year period, if you listen to the snare sounds, they all sound so similar. Like the Rage snare sound, and then put that against the Pearl Jam snare sound with Dave on Verses, and it almost sounds like when he mixes stuff, he's got a sample that he uses, not in place of snare drums, but maybe adds it to the snare drum that they recorded. Either that, or he's got an insane drum tech that knows how to tune all these drums with different players, like what seems like it's identical.
So does it make sense? Yeah.
It's just that crack, like, it's almost like it's a piccolo snare, but you know it's not a piccolo snare because it's got a little bit more depth to it than a piccolo would, but there's just this one, and it almost sounds like it's the same pitch between songs and stuff too.
Yeah.
But his he's kind of known for, like, pushing tape, and I'd like, if I could talk to him, I'd want to know what the biggest difference has been for him. You know, in the 90s, it was still, like, the normal thing to record and do everything on tape. Like, Pro Tools had not, or just digital recording in general, had not taken over yet. You know, that was probably closer to, like, the year 2000. But
right,
just what his thoughts, because so much of his sound is how he uses tape and how hard he hits it to give it that kind of, like, energy, if that makes any sense. And you can't do that on digital.
Right.
You can't fake it in a digital world. You have to do it on tape. And I just wonder how he feels about mixing and stuff like that now, since so much is probably all in the box. It's all digital, you know? If that, like, fucked him up in his workflow somehow. But I know you've probably got a lot of thoughts on that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. I'm just going to stop talking now. I don't know. So what am I missing?
Mirrorball.
Well, hell yeah. Not specifically, no.
Yeah, he produced Mirrorball and played keyboards on it, or I don't know, organ. How do you say it?
Yeah, he played that, like, pump organ thing.
Right. Yeah. And when it came time to tour, and Eddie wasn't going to tour at all, I guess, you know, that he was telling a story about how, like, his agent, somebody called him and said that they wanted him to tour that summer with, like, Neil Young wanted him to go out and tour. And he was like, no, I'm going on vacation with my family. I've been working like crazy.
Right.
And then, like, a couple days later, Mike calls him and is like, hey, man, we really want you to come out. And he's like, no, I'm going on vacation with my family this summer. And then, like, the next day, Neil Young actually picked up the phone and called him and said, like, we need you, you know? And he was like, well, I really just wanted to go on vacation this summer with my kids. And he was like, oh, bring them, you know? So he was like, well, I can't say no to that. So he ended up touring that European tour with Neil Young on the Mirrorball stuff.
That's so kick-ass.
Yeah.
Well, and I love, too, that I think in that interview or whatever that you might be referencing, he also said, he's like, I think I ended up doing it for free because I spent all my pay on paying for my family to be out there with me. So
Right. Yeah. It
was like a wash at the end of the day. But I think if you're Brendan O'Brien, you can take the hit. He's got to have so much money.
Yeah. They, you know, on that tour, they played a few Neil Young songs. So that's got to be part of the allure, to be playing with Neil Young on some of his songs in these crazy European towns, yeah. You know?
Yeah. That would have been a dream, literal dream come true, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Even Brendan O'Brien can't say no to
it. And then you go back to the hotel and your family's there, you know?
Or they're just side stage with you, yeah.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And he probably ended up paying for his own tour bus. That's probably how he managed it. Unless,
yeah,
I don't know, does Neil Young fly around on a private jet?
I don't know. Probably.
Probably. God, could you imagine?
In 95? Oh, man.
Shit, still now.
Yeah.
You know? What else? Is there anything else we need to cover with old Brendan? I mean, I think the most important thing is just that the trust he's built with Pearl Jam, that's how they kept making better and better records. Like, he has a rapport and a trust with them where he can say that he doesn't like something. You know, he doesn't right. have to be like a sycophantic producer, like, oh, yeah, exactly, it's great.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And obviously it's worked. You know, he only, what was it, 4 albums that he didn't record with them? You know, I mean, obviously 10 because they weren't really known. But then there was just a few albums in those middle years, but they've been back with him the last 3 or 4 albums.
Yeah, and even on something like Binaural that he didn't produce, he still mixed half the record, you know? So yeah. his sound is still on that record.
Yeah. But,
I mean, obviously, that relationship, we as fans and listeners, we have a lot to, we owe a lot to old Brendan for, he had to have helped keep the sanity, too, you know? Mm-hmm. You can't literally have everyone melting down through some of those records like it sounds like they were, and I don't know. You got to really dig in those kind of weird yeah. situations.
Yeah.
And if he hadn't, and again, the trust thing, then those records could have come out way different than the ones we got without him, you know?
Yeah.
So. All right, then. Well, I think we sufficiently, I guess,
recreated
the magic that we lost. It was still a fun yeah. conversation. I'm sure we're going to get done right now and think of 50 things that we talked about last time right. that we didn't this time. Yeah. But we'll talk about Brendan again.
We should we mention, in case people don't know, that the original episode that we recorded for today was lost in time.
Yes.
Lost. So this, what you've just heard was the second round of the Brendan O'Brien episode.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about him again. It's all fine. But thanks to everyone yeah. that waited 24 hours. Sorry we're late. But we obviously have gotten it to you as soon as we can. Thanks for being understanding and patient. If you'd like to send us an email directly about how much you hate us now for being late this week, you can email us. It's singlepodcasttheory@gmail.com. We're on all the socials, YouTube, Facebook, blah, 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 Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff that Brad B. is so good about keeping update. That wasn't sarcasm if it sounded like it.
Okay.
I'm serious.
All right.
You're the shit.
Thank you.
You keep all that stuff running for sure.
I try. And speaking of that, I did post on Sunday,
mm-hmm.
I guess, Sunday, that we were going to be late, and everyone was very cool about it. So thank you guys awesome. For getting back at me. We do appreciate it.
Hell yeah. And thanks again to all of our Patreon supporters. If you would like to check out maybe helping us out the show, we don't make any money from it. This support that goes to the show stays with the show. It doesn't go to, you know, our gas bill or mortgages or anything like that.
My new bathroom.
Your new bathroom, yeah. It all goes back to the show so we can find ways to make it more exciting and give more back to you guys as listeners. So, again, that's patreon.com, patreon.com/singlepodcasttheory. Let's wrap it up.
Are you sure?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
God, now what if I walk in and it stopped recording.
This has
halfway
not been
through.
Recording the yeah. whole time. Oh my God.
Let's not say that. So until next week, I'm Brad Lyons.
And I'm Brad Blazek saying, please tell Lucifer he can't have this one. Her spirit's too strong.
Yeah! Yeah. Skadoosh! All right, peace.
Be good.
I died and you just said that. I died and you walked by and said, no, I'm dead.
I was high. Fuck yeah.